The Incomparable, number 567, May 2021.
Welcome back, everybody, to The Incomparable, a podcast that gets dumber as the years go by. I'm your host, Jason Snell, and this episode promises to be, I hope, one of the dumber episodes we've done. It is because of a brilliant idea by our very own Lisa Schmeiser, who said, as we were all talking in Slack, what would happen if auteur directors were given intellectual property from comic books and told to make a comic book movie? And from there, we spitballed out basically what if it was like Mad Libs and you basically were handed directors and intellectual property and told to make a pitch for that person's movie. And essentially, that's what we're going to be doing here. We're going to imagine, if you will, famous directors making superhero movies, because, you know, that's all the movies there are anymore, as far as I know, as far as I can tell. There are no other movies but superhero movies. So, of course, your famous directors will need to make superhero movies. It's the law. It's not just a good idea. It's the law. Let me tell you, in the order in which they will pick, as selected by random.org, who is on this spectacularly interesting podcast episode. Picking first, you'll hear him first. It's not a draft. It's not a draft. It doesn't matter. I'll explain how this works later. But first, the first person you will hear pitching a ridiculous movie will be Nathan Alderman. Hello.
Hi. I am really excited to find out what would happen if a visionary filmmaker like, say, Zack Snyder were to take on, the Justice League.
Oh, boy. You know, tune in and find out, everybody.
Oh, I hope we have 4 hours to find out.
Monty Ashley will be speaking second tonight. Monty, hello.
Hi, Jason. I've nearly settled down on my picks, so that's exciting.
Okay, good. You're right with me. That's good. You know, you gotta have some latitude.
Yeah.
The inventor of this madness, Lisa Schmeiser, will then be heard from. Hello.
I'm so glad I have Namor in my lineup. I'm so glad.
Oh, spoiler alert.
I'm so glad that I submitted him on the long list.
Then it will be Philip Michaels. Hello.
So not only have you run out of ideas, you've apparently run out of panelists. What am I doing here?
Well, here's the thing. I think most of us know about comic book intellectual property, and you know about directors. So
Sure.
Thank you. Thank you for knowing about film.
Because I have a list here of comic. I don't know who these people are.
Well, that's not entirely true. But we'll get to that. Yeah. Moises Chuyon does know about film and comic books, and he is also here. Hello.
I am hoping to enrage at least one panelist per round.
Okay, good. I think we're going to make a lot of people angry tonight. That's what I'm hoping for. Then David J. Lohr will appear. Hello.
I don't care about getting anyone else angry. I just want to get Martin Scorsese angry because these films are cinema tonight.
Oh my. We'll have words.
Careful, Marty's going to have you whacked.
Even though this is not a draft, I will still pick last. Now, here's how this works. We assembled a very long list of directors and a very long list of superhero properties, and sort of loosely, but superhero properties. I then assigned randomly, and I used random.org for all of this, directors and superhero properties to all of the panelists. So we're going to do 3 rounds. For each round, the panelists have been asked to pick a director from their list of 4 or 5 directors and a property from their list of 4 or 5 properties. Again, chosen completely at random, I assure you. I did it myself, completely at random. And craft a pitch for a superhero movie from a director connected to a property. And that's it. And then let the money roll in, is basically what I'm saying. Let the money roll in. You contact their people, they'll contact your people, we'll make it happen. And so again, I just want to say 24 hours ago, everybody was given these pairings at random, and they have to, from that, assemble a pitch. That was the premise here. Nathan, you get to kick this off in round one. Tell us your pitch. Who's your director, and what is the intellectual property from a corporation that they will be turning into cinema, as it were?
Whew. Okay, well, round one was an embarrassment of riches. I hope we'll have a bring out your dead round, because there's one that's so egregiously stupid, I just have to share it. But in the end, I had to follow my heart. And that's why I chose Steven Spielberg directing Crypto the Superdog. It's E.T. meets Poltergeist at the dawning of the internet age. So it's the mid-90s in suburban Greentown, USA, and 13-year-old Jerry and her 8-year-old brother Joe are the new kids in town. Their parents just got divorced, their dad's in the wind, and their mom, Laura Long, who is played by Mary Louise Parker, because I always wanted to see her in a be like the harried mom in a Spielberg movie, is throwing herself into her exhausting new job at the local computer company, forcing Jerry to take care of her younger brother. So Jerry misses her dad, her friends, the excitement of big city life in Metropolis. School is a nightmare. Her only friend, and not by choice, is the local weirdo, Stuart Shue Schuster, a nerd who's into computers and strange music and won't shut up about Superman and all the exciting things that are happening everywhere Jerry isn't. But one night, everything changes. Home alone while their mom works late, the kids see a falling star. Joe runs after it. Jerry chases him to the woods at the edge of the development where they discover a crashed spaceship with a sweet, lovable dog inside. He doesn't have a name, just a tag with a symbol like Superman's on it, so they name him Crypto and they smuggle him home. But Jerry and Joe soon discover that Crypto is no ordinary dog. He's got amazing powers, just like Superman's. Before they can tell anyone, sinister agents of the DEO swoop into town looking for this strange visitor, and the kids decide they're going to hide him to keep him safe. Problem is, the DEO's not the only one looking, and Crypto's not the only strange visitor who crash-landed. There is a voice whispering on the telephone wires, in the late-night TV static, in the screech of modems as they dial into America Online. It is burrowing into the brains of the adults of Greentown, taking them over and turning them into puppets. It'll stop at nothing to find the creature from Krypton, pull out its secrets piece by piece, and use them to conquer the planet. Its name is Brainiac. Now Jerry, Joe, Shu, and Laura must band together with their new furry friend and his amazing abilities to stop an alien invasion happening under their noses, save the world, and help Crypto find where and with whom he truly belongs.
So my first note is, I wasn't aware there was going to be fantasy casting in this.
you weren't aware.
I'm frantically writing names on a piece of paper now. Jiminy crickets.
Yeah, and your plot is very detailed. Although I like the idea that your elevator pitch is essentially, well, what if E.T. were K-9?
Pretty much, yeah.
Let me ask you this, Nathan. Is there any room in this Warner Brothers picture for the Iron Giant?
God, I wish so. Would do that in a heartbeat.
Maybe the kid has like an Iron Giant.
At least the Iron Giant's dog.
I mean, the Iron Giant goes in basically all Warner Brothers movies now, so why not?
All superheroes have a dog, don't you? Is Superman in your movie, Nathan? Or is he only hinted at?
I think he would show up probably at the very end. As for the Iron Giant, it would take place before August 1999 when it came out, but I'd be sure to have a scene where a struggling young animator happens to stop by Greentown for gas, and he hears the words Iron and Giant and then goes,
Superman in a bit
now
of
there's
a...
There's an idea.
Superman in a bit of a mid-credit sequence, is that what we're thinking? Sort of a...
I thought about that, or I thought maybe it takes place during the death of Superman, since that happened in the mid-90s.
I feel like I need to ask about the mid-credit sequence in every single pitch now. Any other questions for Nathan about Crypto the Superdog, which is, you know, have you seen E.T.? It's kind of like that, but with a dog.
What kind of dog is he?
Sounds like a Prince Money. I mean, you got a dog, you got superheroics, you got a heartwarming story. I mean,
and a terrifying villain.
It's a real Marley and Me. I like it.
And you can use CGI, so no real dogs are harmed during the making of the film.
Oh, now, no, we're harming dogs. That is what
I don't want to watch the movie unless a dog is in peril.
It does. Yeah. It does what no live action Superman movie has done so far. Make good use of Brainiac.
So Monty made a good point there, which is what dog is this? What kind of dog is Crypto the Superdog? What breed of dog?
He's a very good boy. That's what he is.
But like a French bulldog or something?
Or like a chihuahua?
He's whatever he's in the comics. I don't know the exact breed. Some sort of shepherd, Dalmatian.
Some sort of white lab.
He's a white dog with long floppy ears, you know?
Okay. All right.
He's a Kryptonian smell hound. I don't know.
A Kryptonian smell hound.
Solid. All right. Thank you, Steven Spielberg's Crypto, the Superdog, in theaters never... but in our hearts. Monty, what do you have to pitch to us?
Detective Chimp.
Yes!
I'm
so happy.
Surely I don't need to tell you this, but Detective Chimp is a chimpanzee with no unusual physical abilities, save the level of agility and physical strength that comes with being a chimpanzee. Mm-hmm. But at some point, he drank from the Fountain of Youth, which lets him speak with any living creature. So that's neat. Now, I'm trying to decide how to lead into the director, and I'll just say this. Detective Chimp will be played by Eugene Levy. Because this is a Christopher Guest movie.
Yes!
Which means I can't go into the kind of detailed plot that Nathan went to.
Right.
But I assume that, you know, there's a murder, kind of a Knives Out thing. Parker Posey's over here. She did something. Catherine O'Hara's over here. She did something. And then the crudest CGI available turns Eugene Levy into Detective Chip.
Of course.
So they literally just shot it as a live action movie and then they like chimpify him later?
Yes.
I just want to back this up here and say the world's crudest CGI effects ever. That, like, that's in the pitch. Like, oh, this sounds like we'd have to spend a lot of money. And Monty's saying,
no,
hold on. Hold on. We don't need motion capture suits. We just need some Microsoft Paint.
Cost effective is good.
I feel like Eugene Levy might actually commit to wearing a monkey suit.
Hey, if he's willing to, that's fine. We will cover it up with crude CGI, though. The crude right. CGI is part of the aesthetic.
Your mid-credit sequence is a cut to Andy Serkis with a tear running down
yes.
his
cheek. Humanoid DC superheroes failed, so obviously we are making all of the animals work.
That's right.
Hey, it's just like DC discovered in the Silver Age. You put a gorilla on the cover and sales go up by 40%.
That's right. I think everybody would enjoy Detective Chimp. He is, it says here, detective skills rivaling those of Ralph Dibny, the Elongated Man, and Batman. Mm-hmm. His intelligence quotient is estimated to be higher than 98% of the adult human population because he's a Mensa.
He's the world's greatest chimp detective.
That's right, he is.
You need to have Jennifer Coolidge play Jane Goodall.
Done.
Yeah.
Done. Sold.
Yeah, who does Parker Posey play?
Lisa gets a fantasy cast
talk
all our
about
movies.
So much or not talk about things.
They use tools or don't use tools.
I want to see Michael McKean as the villain of the piece, a dissipated neuron.
All right. Mostly improvised, Monty, you're thinking?
Yeah. It'll be just okay. Like his good movies and also a couple of his bad movies, like that mascot thing.
Okay. All right. I think a mostly improvised murder mystery is fascinating. How would that work? They agree on some details.
Michael McKean did it, and Harry Shearer, was the red herring.
All right. Christopher Guest, Detective Chimp. Can't wait to see it. Unfortunately, you know, it doesn't exist, but you never know. Lisa, you're up. What movie are you pitching to us?
I was thrilled when my directors among them in this round, one of them is John Waters, whom I adore and who I really feel we need more of his sensibility in the DC universe. So,
oh boy.
So I'm pitching John Waters Booster Gold.
Yes.
Except like here, Michael John Carter is an MC for a local teen dance show. And he's just really restless that he's in this tiny mid-Atlantic market. He wants to crack the big time. And when visiting dignitary Rick Snark happens to choke on a crab cake at an Orioles game, MJ claims that Snark personally vetted him as the successor. There's just one thing. He's tongue-tied, horribly so. So his best friend Skeets has to set up a technological solution so he can fake his way into becoming the host of American Dance Stand.
Skeets?
Yes. And you may wonder, how does the name Booster Gold come about? It turns out that was what that was what Rick Snark used to sign all of his pornographic drawings as. And he was drawing on a pad of paper at the baseball game when he choked on the crab cake. And Booster Gold uses this, or I should say MJ uses this to convince people, no, he wanted me to succeed him as Booster Gold. Here you go.
I genuinely want John Waters to hear this pitch.
So I assume for this movie, Lisa, that a digitally generated divine appears somehow. In what part?
In the mid-credits sequence, dancing with John Travolta as Edna Turnblad.
I would like to say divine as Darkseid. She's got the forehead for it. And, you know, Darkseid already wears a skirt and knee-high boots. So, you know, it's a lock.
I feel like you could also do like a DC Marvel crossover because Mr. Sinister and the obsession with capes and the face makeup would also work well with Divine.
Honestly, Lisa, I think you could not find a better match. This is, again, I want to stress here, these were all randomly selected, but John Waters directing Booster Gold. Booster Gold is such a bizarre character that I would love to see this. That is just such a great match.
I mean, the basic gist of Booster Gold is from a future where everybody is a superhero, mm-hmm. and he's kind of a boring jackass, mm-hmm. and he comes back to our time because he wants to be interesting, and he's mm-hmm. still not really that interesting.
And this has got this guy, his sole dream is to basically host American Dance Stand. Mm-hmm. It's a small dream. I just really love John Waters films. Like Pecker is one of my favorites just because of the creative energy and the mayhem and the affection that goes into it. And so I'd like to see some of that in the DCU.
What rating is this movie?
R.
Okay.
Oh my God, it's John Waters. Yeah. I feel like you can't expect him to turn it. Like, the DC universe is clearly not bothered by gore or terribly skimpy costumes or
movies that are actually watchable.
It'll fit in just fine.
So, like, why would you, like, all of a sudden pretend you care about standards or practices when John Waters is in charge?
That's why you hire John Waters. Exactly. Mm-hmm. All right, Phil, it's your turn. You know about directors.
Oh, sure, I do. And I don't want to pull back the curtain on this concept, but I thought we were all working off the same list, and I had a moment of blind, sweaty panic that I was just going to have to elbow people out of the way to get to the actual things that I knew about on this list. So when you said I was fourth, my heart sank. Because there's only one movie that needs to be made. There's only one movie that's calling out to be made. Friends, that is the Gambit and, I guess, Rogue movie. Because you included her in the list.
Yeah, well, I you can use Rogue if you want.
Why not?
Because, again, I will say, we chose randomly from 100+ characters, and somehow you got Gambit, and I'm not kidding.
Yeah, sure I did.
I'm not kidding.
I'm telling you, random.org is sentient. It knows us now.
It knew.
Anyhow, yeah, it says Rogue Gambit, and we can throw in Rogue for the ladies. They'll need something to put their eyes on when they cannot bear to look at Gambit anymore, the ideal of every superhero. Yes, as people who follow my Twitter account may know, I'm always on my about Gambit, about him being the greatest superhero and all.
It's true.
Again, that's because he is, sure. Gambit, he the best.
I don't want to, again, pull back the curtain here. It's kind of a bit, folks. I like Gambit. I'm not in love with him. But, time you knew. Also, Santa Claus doesn't exist. Rosebud is the sled. Anyhow.
What?
Yeah. No, we're,
what?
We're, yeah, we're...
Dead right there, a felony, Frere.
Anyhow, I do enjoy Gambit.
I go do the rest of the podcast as Gambit.
There's only one director on this list that I think could... bring the proper approach to Gambit, or at least the approach that I want to see, and that's Sam Raimi. So, you know, we're doing zoom shots, we're doing stooge stunts, we're doing Gambit going, I don't believe it, and then getting poked in the eye. And then, to cast Gambit, you would need someone with such charisma, such comic timing, such skill. I'm not available, folks, but I think that only Bruce Campbell could do justice to the role in the Sam Raimi movie.
Oh, yeah. Great. Oh, my gosh.
And who'd be Rogue? I don't know. Amelia Clark. She was charming in an interview. I'd like to see if she could pull off the accent. So, Sam Raimi's Gambit with the guy with the chin and the nice dragon lady. That'd be a good movie.
What I love about this, Phil, is that you've taken the premise and you went, when an auteur is handed a franchise property, often what comes out is a remarkable train wreck.
Yeah.
And you've produced a remarkable train wreck.
Yes, exactly. We're not, this time Sam Raimi's not waiting around until Spider-Man 3 to lose interest. He's going right in.
He'll wear a suit on the set that makes you think he's taking it seriously. By the way, at this point in this premise, somebody's decided to greenlight a Gambit movie. So, of course, it's a train wreck.
Oh, we saw that coming.
Now, how thick is Bruce Campbell's accent going to be?
He's
going to
do the same snooty French maitre d' accent that he did in that Spider-Man movie.
Oh, sweet. Yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that's the accent.
Okay. I don't know why this movie can't be made, honestly. It's sitting right there. Moises, it's your turn. What do you have for us?
My round one options are so good that I have one that I'm going with because I feel like it's the best, most substantial pitch, and I'm going to enjoy the Bring Out Your Dead round so that I can tell you about Jean-Luc Godard's Crisis on Infinite Earths. There is a character that stands out within the Superman family of characters that is not Crypto the Superdog, though Crypto the Superdog is magnificent and wonderful, and I love Crypto the Superdog. And I think Crypto was the beginning of rehabilitating the Superman family of titles by leaving Superman out completely, with the exception of a mid-credit scene. And I think that's what we're going to have to do to make cinematic Superman decent again. And I think the next step is undoubtedly by making a Lois Lane movie, one of the great superheroes of truth, justice, and the American way in all of DC comics.
You know, journalists are the real superheroes.
Said completely impartially. Yep. Said completely impartially.
Have you not seen the movies about journalists? They're always the hero. There's the Post and the paper.
Spotlight.
And all the president's men.
Now, here's the question. Here's the question.
Newsies?
Do we take this
Newsies?
The direction?
Have you seen Newsies? It's not really about the
Do we make this a musical like Newsies? I say no. Do we go All the President's Men? I don't think so. Do we go prestige newspaper drama, The Post or The Paper or various other things? No, I think what we do is we go a hard crime with David Fincher, the director of Gone Girl, the director of Seven, the director of Fight Club. We let Lois Lane go into the grittiest, grimiest, weirdest corners of the DC universe. She has to go to Bloodhaven for some reason. She has to team up with Detective Chimp in a tie-in to Monty's movie. We have her crisscross the globe to solve some sort of a thing that justifies a 2.5 hour runtime, more than any Superman movie has in the last 10 years.
You know, first rule of the Daily Planet, don't talk about Superman.
Just get me pictures, damn it.
That's a reference.
We can leave Superman completely out of this because her comic series from back in the day was Superman's girlfriend,
yes,
Lois Lane. I always resented this because Lois Lane, seriously, is one of my favorite characters in the entire DC multiverse. And when you have one of the great reporters in fiction as your protagonist, you can tell all kinds of stories, and you can bring in all kinds of weird DC ephemera. You can bring in Etrigan the Demon and have her like interrogate him as a source or something. Go weird, go strange. Have Killer Croc rear end her as she's trying to speed off after somebody who's a suspect in a crime. I don't know, like, just pack it to the gills with all kinds of stuff that is not cool or interesting enough for like the Justice League recut. Triple Redux or anything like that.
I love a film by David Fincher that you didn't mention is Zodiac, which is his journalism film.
Oh, that's such a good movie. I love it.
So I feel like maybe that's your model here for
what it is.
Lois
that's
Lane
exactly
investigation kind of thing, except it'll be instead of a creepy 70s serial killer, it'll be creepy DC Comics villains. Like,
you know, what if she solves the Calendar Man mystery for Batman? And so the Long Halloween doesn't happen.
Clock King.
Mr. Snell, now that you mentioned this.
Condiment King.
Screw it. We're full on crossing over with the established Detective Chimp franchise. Detective Chimp is a full on co-star in this movie.
Oh, great.
And I don't know. Now I'm grasping. I feel like, you know, like Zodiac, this needs a third hand.
And in the post-credit sequence, by the way, I suppose a spacecraft will have crashed in a little town, and that'll be your tie-in to the extended made-up DC universe with Crypto the Superdog. So, you know, it'll all just come together.
Oh, for like one horrifying moment, I was like, and Superman's a baby now?
Yeah, I was about to say, Lois Lane is an adult. Lois? Superman is an infant.
Can I adopt the baby? No, the dog from Nathan's movie.
I have a question about your Detective Chimp plan. Mm. Is it still Eugene Levy in extremely bad CGI?
Yes, it is.
Good.
You want to know why, Monty? Because you produced a modern classic, and I am nothing if not respectful of legends.
Right. Show
tell Fincher not to mess with it.
I want to see Eugene Levy get his Best Supporting Actor Oscar for that grim, moody performance.
All right, David Fincher's Lois Lane. Sure, why not? David Lore, it's your turn now. What's your pitch for us?
This round had so many good options on both sides, but one jumped out at me from each list, and I was just like, this is how I know random.org is sentient, because one of my very favorite comic miniseries of all time is Darwin Cook's New Frontier.
Oh, yeah.
I would love to see a live-action film of New Frontier, but the director that jumped out at me, not sure if it's the best director for it, but it would be interesting. There'd be a little bit too much improvisation, a little bit too much distraction with minutiae. Because I couldn't help but wonder, what would it be like directed by Elaine May? I think it would go something like this. The phone rings. Jimmy Olsen answers. Hello?
Hello, Jimmy, it's your mother.
I know, Mom.
Good. I was afraid you had forgotten the sound of my voice.
But Mom, how could I?
Jimmy, James, I saw you on the news again.
All right, I can explain.
No, no need. You were getting rescued by your pal Superman again.
He sure is swell, Ma.
Yes, but my anxieties, Jimmy, I can't help but think that you wouldn't get into these situations so often if you spent less time around him. He's a dangerous influence.
Oh, I'm just doing my job, Mom. I'm a cub reporter.
Well, that's another thing. When do you stop being a cub? You're 45 years old.
And that's DC's New Frontier, written and directed by Elaine May.
I had no idea we were doing character work, so... Need to hang up and, like, apparently contact people to do readings for me.
Get some
I'm right
people.
Here, Philip.
I have a budget question.
Oh, sure.
How much money are you intending to pay Elaine May so that she does this?
I would say back the truck up to her door.
All right.
Because, man, I mean, the whole thing would be her and Jimmy discussing what's really going on in the story.
See, what you save in special effects budget, you can just give right to Elaine May.
That's, you know, right. What they say, it's dangerous business. That was an Ishtar joke, yeah, for exactly, okay, me.
Yes. For everyone who
all
has seen
Ishtar.
Fans
out there.
Yeah, they're loving it.
Rolling in the aisles.
Yep. Ishtar fans are loving it.
Somewhere Warren Beatty is like, yes.
It's all worth it now, Warren Beatty says, choking back tears. Yeah.
There's a joke on the podcast. Thank God, at last.
It was that guy in Austin.
All right. I guess it's my turn.
I'm so happy. I'm excited.
y'all know the Avengers, right? You heard of the Avengers.
No,
you
know the Avengers. For me.
Kids love the Iron Man. They love the Thor. They love the other guys who are in the Avengers.
If you say they love Hawkeye, I am literally calling
they
it
tolerate
Captain America
Hawkeye.
And the other guys that are in the Avengers. Yes. Coming from Marvel Comics.
You know,
no one loves Hawkeye.
You know what would be better, though, for the kids than the Avengers?
And a Hawkeye, no Hawkeye.
I really hope I know where this is going.
It's the Pet Avengers, everybody.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Who's in the Pet Avengers, you may ask? Well, Lockjaw obviously is the leader. He is the big bulldog from the moon who has a little tuning fork on his helmet or on his head, and he can teleport anywhere. But that's just where it starts. Lockheed the dragon is in there. Speedball's cat Hairball is in there.
Yes, Niels.
The Falcon's little bird Redwing. Part of the Pet Avengers. And of course, there's Zabu, the saber-toothed tiger who belongs to Kazar from the South Pole. He's in there. And most importantly, Frog Thor, part of the Pet Avengers.
He's not a pet.
He's in the Pet Avengers. Look,
he is the leader.
We'll finesse it in the screenplay. But anyway, yeah. I think the kids are going to love it. And I know what you're saying to yourself, which is, wow, a whole movie that's live action. Like, are you thinking like the Jungle Book kind of thing, where it's like it's live action, but it's really all just photorealistic CGI of all these pets having Avenger style Avengers? Perhaps there are like live action actors, some cameos we've seen from other people in other movies and all that. And yeah, we could do that. I think we could do better, though. I think the Pet Avengers, because it's going to be beloved by children all over the world, where they're going to be delighted by the idea that animals can be superheroes too, in a world of beautiful nature and clouds and airships and other interesting items, who better than to call on the great Hayao Miyazaki to direct the animated Lockjaw and the Pet Avengers. So friends, I think we can get Miyazaki for this. He told me once he really loves Lockheed. So I think we can get him on board here for Miyazaki's Lockjaw and the Pet Avengers. And really, who else is left to direct a Marvel movie than Hayao Miyazaki? No one, I say, no one.
So what you're really pitching is Hayao Miyazaki's Lockjaw on the Avenging Cliff by the Sea.
I feel like
you're downplaying the Frog Thor contribution here.
Yeah, true.
Well, if you've seen Howl's Moving Castle, if you've seen Nausicaa, you know that wacky fantasy and quirkiness are all part of Miyazaki's lexicon. It's not just going to be a purely gentle and simple movie like Kiki's Delivery Service or Totoro. It's going to be a little bit more than that. And by the way, if you're asking yourself, friend, Miyazaki making a Marvel movie, surely it will adhere to continuity and make sense.
No.
That's not why you hire him.
Porco Rosso will show up in the end credit sequence.
Oh, yeah. In the mid credit sequence, all of his other characters will say, what did you do? But yes, this is indeed, it will not. In fact, most audiences will watch it and go, well, that was weird, but beautiful. And that's pretty much what we intend. So that's fine. Because frankly, it's a movie about a teleporting dog and a bunch of superpowered animals. So it doesn't need to make a lot of sense. It will be beautiful. There will be airships. There will be nature. And that's the most important thing. Who are the villains? I don't know. There is no villain. There's never a villain in a Miyazaki movie. It's all internal struggle.
Industry.
Industry, the war machine, internal struggle. Mm-hmm. And then we'll learn and we'll grow.
Growing up.
Your own self-doubt is the worst enemy of them all.
Yeah.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
The enemy was inside you the whole time.
Who gets the theme park rights? Because there's a Miyazaki theme park and also famously Disney theme park. Mm-hmm. So I'm just wondering, who gets the rights to the theme park ride based on the Pet Avengers movie?
The whole reason Miyazaki says yes is because the Ghibli Museum gets to do whatever it wants, carte blanche. Oh.
Yes, just at the Ghibli Museum, and then everywhere else, it's fair game. That's it. That's my pitch, and I really did get assigned that, so I'm very happy. Random but Out.org is the best.
Yeah, Jason, wait till we get to round two.
Okay, speaking of round two, let's start it. Nathan, this is now, to be clear, dear listeners, different set of directors, different set of movies. Everybody got a refreshed list for each round. Nathan, what do you have for us?
Well, I feel like I need to apologize because, like, I didn't realize we were supposed to make these ridiculous and funny, so I just got, like, really excited when
That's
I
fine.
Saw
Oh, no,
these
no. My next one is incredibly serious.
Let me stop you there, Nathan. Do you think I wouldn't love to see Miyazaki's Lockjaw and the Pet Avengers? Oh, my God.
I want to see Lane's new friend.
Speedball's cat is in that movie. I am there day one.
It would be amazing.
Did I give the impression I do not want a Gambit movie? Come on, man.
Yeah, at this point, I'm sad I didn't. I felt I can put Crypto the Super Dog on the long list. Is Streaky the Super Cat a bridge too far? Maybe
no.
So. Nope, I shouldn't have resisted.
Nope. Only if Streaky is voiced by Aubrey Plaza.
Nathan, yeah. You get an extra gold star for the fantasy casting. Go ahead.
Okay. So the one name that jumped out at me from directors on this list was Gina Prince-Blythewood. I don't know if you guys have seen The Old Guard on Netflix. It's a terrific action movie, or mm-hmm. Beyond the Lights is a wonderful melodrama. She has these really interesting themes of family, of identity, and of violence and what it means to serve society. And the name on the comic book property that jumped out at me is Jack Kirby's OMAC, One Man Army Corps. So, Bernice Buddy Blank, that's Lupita Nyong'o, is just another warehouse worker for Vista.com, the e-commerce company run by billionaire Morgan Edge, who is, of course, played by J.K. Simmons playing Jeff Bezos.
Stop. Stop drilling, you've struck oil.
So Buddy is anonymous. She's overlooked. She's alone. We put Lupita Nyong'o. Somehow we make her less than spectacular. I'm sure some makeup artist somewhere could do it. She's got a crush on Ben Boxer, Aldous Hodge, her handsome and charming coworker, but she's just never brave enough to tell him about it. She works at this terrible job to support her mom, Angela Bassett, who got sick with early onset Alzheimer's, and Buddy had to drop out of college to take care of her, and she is just treading water, hanging on by her fingernails. So one night, she sees Ben get in trouble for trying to sneak into the warehouse's new expansion and covers for him to save his job. Ben reveals that he's actually an undercover reporter for the Daily Planet. He wanted to expose the awful working conditions at Morgan Edge's warehouses, but whatever's going on in that expansion might be an even bigger scoop. So Buddy helps Ben break in, and they discover it's a high-tech lab. Morgan Edge has been developing a super soldier program, OMAC, the Organically Manipulated Assault Construct, to create his own highly profitable private mercenary army. Ben and Buddy get discovered, they're split up, they're on the run. Just when Buddy seems doomed, Morgan Edge's goons are moving in to kill her. The machine activates. Edge's machine activates and rewrites Buddy Blank into an OMAC, an unstoppable super soldier, super strong, invulnerable, blasts energy from her hands, and she's got the world's most awesome mohawk. She discovers she's been saved by Sister Eye, also Angela Bassett, speaking in her mother's voice to create a rapport. It's an AI created by the shadowy hacker collective known as the Global Peace Agency. They and Sister Eye want to use Buddy as their weapon in a war against Edge and anyone else who threatens world peace as they see it. And they promise that if Buddy helps them, they will use Edge's technology to restore her mom's mind. So now, Buddy's got to protect the people she loves and strive not to be anybody else's puppet or tool while still bringing Morgan Edge to justice. So you've got these themes of like conflict, of duty. Is she going to surrender her individuality and become someone else's tool for the sake of power? Or can she speak up for herself, assert herself to make a lasting positive difference? One thing's for sure, she's going to wreck a whole lot of beefy dudes' days, Jack Kirby style.
This is a great pitch for OMAC, a property that DC, I'm sure, has absolutely no plans for and no idea what to do with.
I mean, the best previous take I saw on OMAC was making him talk like Elvis in the Batman, the Brave and the Bold cartoon. But I don't know. This one just jumped out and shook me by the shirt front, Jack Kirby style.
I love it. Love it. OMAC. Give OMAC some relevance. That's how you revive something like OMAC. You give it a new spin. Love it. Monty, what's your next one?
Ghost Rider has, of course, famously been in a couple of movies with Nicolas Cage playing him. And he's been on Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as Robbie Reyes. But I don't think those portrayals really got to the heart of what Ghost Rider is. When I picture a skeleton driving around a motorcycle, I can only think of one director, David Cronenberg. Now...
Yep.
Oh, wow.
The skeletons we've seen have been way too normal. I want these skeletons to look really weird, and I want them to smash into other Ghost Riders and kind of fuse together in an unsettlingly erotic way. And I don't much care what happens in the movie itself, just a really big scene at the beginning where, let's say, Johnny Blaze is doing a stunt and it goes horribly, horribly, horribly wrong. And then he just does more horribly wrong things until at the end there's like six skulls sticking off of him and maybe H.R. Giger gets resurrected to do a little sketching.
I don't know. I don't know if Cronenberg can pull off a movie where a man's flesh melts off of his bones. I mean, it doesn't seem like it's in his wheelhouse.
I say we give him a try.
From the man who brought you low-budget CGI for Eugene Levy comes unsettlingly erotic body parts fusion.
Oh, yeah. We saved all the budget from the Detective Chimp project. Uh-huh. We gave it to David Cronenberg and said, do whatever you can think of.
And he's going to shoot it in Canada, so it'll be cheap. It's fine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it'll be gross. It'll
yes,
be
it will.
Gross.
Yeah.
Because not only is it skeletons, but they're on fire, Monty.
Oh, yeah.
Flaming skeletons. So Yeah, it's going to be gross, folks.
You want pus, brother? I got pus.
Oh. I mean, in the Nicolas Cage, the second Ghost Rider movie, we did see that he pees fire.
Hmm.
So
that is actually a detail they chose to include.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
It was from the Crank guys. It was from Neville, Dine, and Taylor. So, of course, they're going to have Ghost Rider peeing
like
fire.
Like, a bunch of people got up that morning and said, today is the day today we composite the shot where it looks like somebody.
Yep.
I want to see the visual representation of a UTI with Nicolas Cage's grimacing face above it. That's what happened.
Yep. And I'm saying that it was a good start. Seriously. We push it farther.
Yep.
Lisa, you have to understand that Neville, Dine, and Taylor's whole filmmaking philosophy is methamphetamine and then more methamphetamine and then a little methamphetamine just to take the edge off.
Well, Cronenberg's going to make it languid and gross, and that's going to be great.
Yeah. I think languid and gross is pretty.
Yep. That's also a directing team, languid and gross.
Languid and gross.
And Lisa, it's your turn now. What do you have?
All right. Okay, I need to take a breath because I'm cracking myself up. I'm sorry. Werner Herzog's Plastic Man.
Yes!
Oh my gosh!
I think of Plastic Man, there's only one man that I can think of, and that is the soul of ridiculous absurdity.
Just a man is made of plastic and scratches, so we too are scratched by a cruel reality.
No, this was actually the pitch, yes. Werner Herzog's Plastic Man is a meditation on the ways man contorts himself to create personal meaning in an indifferent universe. It will take place in the Faroe Islands outside in December. That's it.
If you visit the caves, you will find ancient drawings of a plastic-shaped man, showing that from the beginning of time, humanity has felt stretched by its circumstance.
I tried to shoot Plastic Man.
We always distort ourselves for the approval of others.
The plastic baby from the 1980s cartoon is particularly horrifying.
Now, Herzog, of course, famously already did Grizzly Man.
Oh, man.
That's right.
Well, obviously, it's a mashup.
I listened
where they
to
meet.
The tape of the man devoured by sentient plastic, and I was horrified, but I listened to the whole thing. You must destroy this tape, but not until I'm done listening to the whole thing, because I must know the most horrifying thing that could ever happen to a man, that he is devoured by polystyrene.
And what's fascinating is, the script was originally developed as Werner Herzog's Stretch Armstrong, but Hasbro killed the project.
Well, Lisa, I was going to ask, is this a fictional film, or is this just an exploration by Werner Herzog of Plastic Man, the mythos, and what it means for all of us?
¿Por qué no los dos?
Okay. I love that. Actually, that's great, where it's like one of those weird documentaries where there's documentary parts and also acted parts, and you're like, wait a second, did this really happen? Oh, no, this is acting.
Werner Herzog interviewing people.
Tell me again, when he strangled you, what did the plastic man say to you?
I just want to hear Werner Herzog say the words, "You putrid punks."
Okay, Werner Herzog's Plastic Man. What more do you need to know than that? Thank you, Lisa.
The only thing Plastic Man could still be robbed of was his humanity. And it happened.
All right, Phil, it's back around to you.
So where random.org gifted me the Gambit movie and also Rogue. In this round, random.org assigned me directors who I either don't care for or don't know. And I'm going to pick a director whose movies I haven't seen. I'm going to go with Richard Kelly, because I picked the director first and then work backward.
Mm-hmm.
Richard Kelly, so far as I know, his biggest picture, this is the director of Donnie Darko.
Right.
Okay. Haven't seen it. But I understand it has something to do with a giant rabbit.
Mm-hmm.
Spoiler alert for those of you who also haven't seen it. So of the comics that I was assigned, the only thing I think a giant rabbit could fit into is Power Pack. And the reason I say that is, I, again, not a comic I'm familiar with, but it does sound like the serials we used to get on camping trips. So I'm envisioning Richard Kelly making a movie about the Trix rabbit assembling a team of serial mascots. Toucan Sam, Tony the Tiger, I don't know, Cap'n Crunch. And they go out and, fight evil and are trying to get the Trix Rabbit to finally get his hands on a bowl of tricks, as he so wants. And as the in the crucial role of the Trix Rabbit, I see Chris Pine. Toucan Sam, I see some.
That's perfect casting, Phil.
Since Toucan Sam is basically Ronald Coleman, just use a digitally altered Ronald Coleman in the movie. And Queen Latifah is Tony the Tiger. I really think this could work.
Also, Victor Gerber is Cap'n Crunch, please. Victor Gerber.
Of course.
Yes.
Who else has the gravitas?
He's got the Broadway gravitas to hold the epaulettes up. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He can go, and he brings them to the land of Crunchberries. No, it's perfect.
But if the Trix Rabbit gets his hands on all the different colors of Trix cereal, he will put them in the Infinity Spoon and create the crunch that wipes out half the breakfast cereals in the universe.
Well, that sets up the inevitable sequel, dude.
Yeah,
that's right.
I really like this because it's once again Phil is Agent of Chaos, mm-hmm. but B, because that takes the form of an auteur going power mad and taking a licensed property and erasing everything that it actually is
yeah.
and doing mm-hmm. their own version of it.
There's like an yes. opening oh, it's, sequence it's where the power children open up their package of cereal while they're on their trip, and then we never see them again.
It explodes and they're killed.
And that's no, I would say, hey, do you ever wonder if the cereal has adventures too? Oh, don't be an idiot. And then they zoom in on the cereal.
Yeah, exactly.
Medium red shot of the Trix Rabbit going, oh, God.
I mean, I'm excited that we got the Washington Post cinematic universe in here, and now we have the General Mills cinematic universe.
Exactly. This is
great. I like that Phil looked at Richard Kelly and said, hey, rabbits.
Rabbits.
Yep. Yeah. That sounds right.
That's what he does, right?
Yep. He's a rabbit-themed director. That's why he's
an
auteur.
It's all a giant rabbit shows up in his movies.
Uh-huh.
And that's it.
You got it.
And,
you nailed him.
And he never directed Harvey.
Nope.
What the hell?
Well, he's waiting for the
Jake Gyllenhaal hasn't been available.
Okay, Richard Kelly's Power Pack on the list now. Moises, it's your turn. What do you have?
Again, round two, embarrassment of riches. And I selected, I went the partial Phil. I didn't go full Phil, but I started with a director. And it's a director that I submitted to the long list that I felt like I had to put a parenthetical explainer as to who this was. And that is Japanese anime mastermind Hideaki Anno, the creator of Neon Genesis Evangelion and the director of 2016's Shin Godzilla. Mm. An incredible creative mind. In some ways, tortured by his own creation in Neon Genesis. They're anime fans, and they're Neon Genesis Evangelion fans, where it seems like the entirety of their anime fandom it resides in that series. Him taking on the Godzilla franchise was like a breath of getting away from the thing that kind of devoured him. And it is one of the best installments in the Godzilla franchise. So when it comes to handing a superhero franchise to a visionary director, I think it would be absolutely wild to give Anno the Micronauts.
Sure,
Jason,
do whatever you want with them. Essentially, they come cheap. Go for it.
Do whatever you want with them, because I mean, Hasbro just wants them somebody to do something.
Yeah,
with them.
Please give us a film of any kind containing our intellectual property. Signed, Hasbro.
Hand it to a beyond visionary director to succeed where nobody has succeeded in mm-hmm. three decades. Five decades.
Well, and the Micronauts are itself based on the Microman toys from Japan.
Uh-huh.
So it's right. almost like you're bringing them back home.
Jason, preach to the choir. There you go. That's mm-hmm. exactly the angle. In the same way that so many Japanese toys were reworked into American cartoons, and they were literally completely different toys in Japan than they were in the United States, just different stickers on them and names on them. This in many ways is going back to the origins of these characters, and they are weird characters from micro space. And there's a barren bad guy and a character named Acro Year and some really great names and some really cool designs. And considering what Anno did with Shin Gojira, and messing with the holy sacred shrine that is Godzilla, I think it's great to give him quantum science as something that he's very comfortable with. You know, quantum science. Who needs to explain it? That's for quantum physicists. I'm just going to do stuff with Jaegers, with giant kaiju, with any number of things. This is him going way the other direction, and I think it's a slam dunk.
I love it. Again, as somebody who grew up on those comics and playing with those toys, at this point they've talked about doing things with that property for a million years and have not done it. So really just anything. Get somebody good. Honestly, get somebody good and have them do whatever. And that would be great. Like,
stop trying to tie it into Transformers and Mask and
ROM Space Knight and all of that. Just
do a really cool something with Micronauts.
It's cool spaceships and robots, and they're little or not. Whatever. It doesn't matter. It's my childhood beloved thing, but it's really like, you know, just make something and have fun with it. love it. And then, Moy says, then there'll be people who are only Micronauts fans.
Exactly.
And not anime fans, just Micronauts fans. Okay.
Who needs anime when you have Micronauts?
Exactly. Exactly. Well said. Well said. David, it's your turn. What do you have?
All right. All right. Picture, if you will.
Am I in this one?
Dream, if you will, a picture.
Yes. No. Picture, if you will, a boy on the verge of becoming a young man. A boy suddenly granted astounding superpowers by a wizard. Mm. Now, let's say we follow this boy growing up over the course of 12 years, filmed in real time, starting from before his transformation until he's in his early 20s when he wanders around Paris in conversation with Mary Marvel. It's a very talky movie, this Before Shazamhood, written and directed by Richard Linklater, and the sequel Shazammed and Confused.
All right.
Oh, he'd be the villain. He'd be Dr. Sivana.
The best thing about being a superhero is the girls get prettier and I just get more powerful.
Are there like interstitial sequences that are sort of animated but based on live action that's sort of like a Shazam life?
Oh, absolutely.
Good.
Absolutely.
Good,
Waking
good.
Shazam.
Waking
that's,
Shazam,
that's how
sure.
he discovers his talents and powers. Yeah.
Sure, why not?
Why not?
Who plays Mr. Talkie Tawny, the talking tiger?
Wiley Wiggins.
There you
oh,
go.
Good for him.
Wiley would actually be really funny as Mr. Talkie Tawny.
So we can see that we'll look forward to this movie in like 15 years because they're going to have cast a child as the young
Shazam. I'm playing the long game here.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
You know, this basically it's the reboot of the existing Shazam franchise. So,
because he can transform, you're actually going to sort of shoot all the stuff where he's a kid and then all the stuff where he's an adult.
That's literally right.
It'll be the same person just 20
That's
years,
right.
15 years
That's
later.
That's the first time Shazam has ever been able to pull that off.
Uh-huh.
It's pretty
it's
good.
Probably the last the way that's going. But
Yeah.
Okay. Solid. Thank you, David.
Of course, the other people in the scene, once he changes from the little boy to the adult, will also age 15 years.
No, they'll just have to shoot all that at one particular time.
They shoot all that in one. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The older version of Shazam will be acting entirely on a green screen. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, currently being shot chronologically.
A high-quality CGI replacement.
Stephen Sondheim's Merrily We Roll Along, which he's doing the same way as Boyhood, where he's shooting it every few years with the lead. So I look forward to the musical Merrily We Shazam Along.
Sure.
That's the one focused on Mary Marvel.
There you go.
It's my turn. I'm going to pitch a DC Comics property here, which is not my wheelhouse, but I think this is going to work. If I know anything about successful DC Comics franchises, I know that people like Suicide Squad so much that they are going to make the Suicide Squad with James Gunn. And so I'm going to propose another Suicide Squad, the third movie in the series that's not really connected, but sort of. And you're saying to yourself, what's the appeal of the Suicide Squad? Why do people love the Suicide Squad? I think it's a combination of things. First, I think it's a collection of kind of slightly talented but confused people who are working together, but they don't really understand where they're going or what they're doing. They're kind of a band of incompetent musicians in a way, but they're heroes or villains that are also heroes. It's very confusing, but they're sort of confused. That's the point. However, I would also say it's a little bit of a romantic comedy on one level, right? They got to meet cute. They got to get to know each other. They fall out. They come back together. There's obviously going to be a horrific element where there's conflict and anger and violence. Somebody might like break their ankles or something. You never know. Like something like that's going to go in there. And of course, it's going to be a courtroom drama because quite frankly, these villains commit terrible crimes and they're going to have to be brought in court, maybe even military court. I don't know. It depends on where the crimes are committed. Roll it all together. There's only one director who can direct another Suicide Squad. And it's the director of This is Spinal Tap, When Harry Met Sally, Misery, and A Few Good Men, Rob Reiner. So Rob Reiner's another Suicide Squad coming to a theater far away from you in 2024? Sure, let's say that. Another Suicide Squad.
Grandpa, tell me a story about the Suicide Squad. Well, I don't know. I don't know if you're too old for a story like that.
Yep. And it's Margot Robbie. It turns out Grandpa is Margot Robbie.
Wow, she can play anything.
And you got a great Easter egg when King Shark gets called Meathead by someone. Mm-hmm. You know.
I think also the Harry Connick Jr. soundtrack is going to be just
it's going to be lit.
But people will love it. I do.
It's going to be that sort of Professor Longhair style piano.
And there'll be some standards mixed
it
in.
Had to be you.
And also portions of it will be shot documentary style and improvised. Just as with Detective Chimp.
It had to be you, Mr. J.
Well, you have portions where there's like two of them sitting on the couch talking about like how they knew.
Yes,
a little
documentary style flashbacks from later on about how they met and what happened next.
Like Amanda Waller and a parole officer or
and
something.
Of course, there will be a tie into North because it'll be crappy.
The use of it had to be you has to be tied to various characters being killed. Your brain smashed in by
there'll
a
be,
bat.
There'll be a very slow, plaintive, piano-based cover of It Had to Be You as they all die and are smashed.
And of course, there has to be a scene where they all sit around and they say, you know, supervillains who become heroes and do heroic things can't possibly be friends.
Mm-hmm. And they'll do it in a weird accent, just like the one you just tried, which is how Margot Robbie speaks throughout the entirety of Birds of Prey. All right.
Oh, I find that so distracting.
Yeah. So another Suicide Squad. There it is. That's my pitch there. That's all I got. We're going to do one more round, and this round has a little twist on it in that we're going to speak to the dead. Woo! We are going to pitch movies directed by directors who have passed away. But you know what? That's not going to stop us. We're going to go back in time to when they were alive and make a superhero movie, suckers, using this
dig them up
machine.
And force them to make a movie.
Yeah, that's right. They'll be like, funny books? What is that like? And we're like, never mind. Here's your thing.
Rick and Morty season 6. That's what we're doing.
They can't do worse than Justice League.
All right, Nathan, spooky from beyond the grave. What is your pitch?
Well, it's funny you should mention Spooky. This one goes out to my Lions, Towers, and Shields benefactor, Shelley Brisbane. How many of y'all have heard of Henri-Georges Clouzot?
Oh, yeah.
Good inspector.
He's basically like, he's like Francis Alfred Hitchcock. And you might have heard of two of his movies, The Wages of Fear, where a bunch of really sweaty, burly guys drive a truck full of nitroglycerin through the jungle.
Yeah. I just watched that. It's great.
It's great. And Diabolique, where the mistress and the wife of a sadistic schoolmaster team up to bump him off, only to find things start going horribly wrong when his body mysteriously vanishes. So suspense, creepiness. I went through the studio archives, and I actually found buried in the Warner Brothers archives is a script that Henri-Georges Clouzot wrote for them in the mid-1950s. Now, he called it Toucher Brûlant de la Terreau. But I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing that. But as you'll see, they changed it to something a little more marketable. So it's the 1950s. It's Florida. Three bank robbers. Your basic sadistic thug. That's Dan Duryea. The calculating mastermind. That's Robert Ryan. And the reluctant muscle. That's Robert Mitchum. Are running from the cops with a $20,000 in cash and their hostage, the bank security guard, James Edwards, who you may know as the African-American guy in The Manchurian Candidate. He's awesome. He's cool. Check him out. So they flee into the Everglades. Carl knows the what's his name? Robert Mitchum knows the swamp. And he's like, we can hide out there till the heat dies down. But in the Everglades, they stumble upon a burnt-out ramshackle cabin. And that's where they meet hard-bitten reporter Mae Turner, Thelma Ritter, and Lily Salas and Francis, who are searching for clues to the mysterious death of Lily's dad, Ted, a government scientist who was researching a formula to increase crop yields. Some strange G-men wearing gas masks show up and start shooting at them, so they have to take Mae and Lily hostage, too, and flee deeper into the swamp to escape both the cops who are coming after them and these G-men in gas masks who won't stop pursuing them, trying to kill them for unknown reasons. But something is wrong with this swamp. It is not what you would think of as a normal swamp, which is creepy enough as is. No, reality is odd in this swamp. It seems to be unusually thin, and the swamp seems to be manifesting these people's darkest fears. And there's a creature in the swamp, a strange creature that is stalking it, relentlessly trailing them, seemingly obsessed with Lily. So to survive the night and make it to the other side of the swamp, the protagonists will have to navigate suspicion and treachery within the group and the manifestations of their greatest, eeriest fears from the swamp itself. Because whatever knows fear burns at the touch of the Man-Thing. Yes, I'm taking this stupid Marvel comic from the 1970s, and I would make it totally awesome.
I love it. It's much better if it's done by a French director. That's what I say.
I love Man-Thing. No notes.
No notes. Man-Thing. What more? I mean, you've added so much to the dumb Swamp Thing knockoff.
Don't worry. This movie will be available in an extended cut for those of you who like a giant-sized Man-Thing.
Oh, boy.
Oh, dear.
All right.
There goes my Swamp Thing pitch.
It's a reference, people. Monty, it's your choice. Spooky.
Spooky indeed, because I'm going with the Legion of Monsters. Now, there are two sets of Legion of Monsters casts. One from 1976 is led by Ghost Rider and has Man-Thing, Morbius the Living Vampire, and Werewolf by Night. But I think I'm going to go with the 2010 lineup, where Werewolf by Night is the leader. And then the other people in the group are Frankencastle, which is a Frankenstein version of Punisher, Manphibian, Man-Thing, Nakantu, the Living Mummy, and Satana. Now, it's important that Satana be in this because this is a romantic comedy directed and written by Nora Ephron.
Excellent.
This is really shaping up to be a summer man thing.
Too. Yeah. Now, unfortunately, that's all I have, but I assume
that's golden.
You got it, baby.
Yeah, I figure Nora
can use a
heavy.
Which one is she in love with? Or is it like a love triangle?
It's like the monster around the corner.
Oh, it's a love dodecahedron.
Yeah, it's a love septagon.
Okay. Well, I love it.
You've
it's great.
Got monsters.
It's going to be funny. It's going to be heartwarming. Also funny. And it's going to make you think.
I'll have what she's having.
Scared sleepless in Seattle.
No reference at all. Just a quote.
All right.
Looking forward to seeing Tom Hanks play Werewolf by Night.
Or that mummy
he's
guy.
The most decent Werewolf by Night you'll ever see.
All right. Solid. Lisa, what do you have?
So Jean Renoir's Namor is just the rules of the game, only underwater.
At last, a movie for me.
Yeah.
Yes. Sue Storm is, of course, involved somehow.
Somehow.
Because, who else is Namor having the affair with?
No, you're right.
It's, yeah.
The surface woman. The beautiful surface woman.
Exactly. And he resents her. Oh, how he resents her. And her marriage is no great shakes either. And Reed has a mistress as well. And that mistress is called Science.
Indeed.
It's black and white. Bubbles go up occasionally, beautifully framed. And it's in French. All of it.
Fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Kevin Feige will not know how to market it.
Jean Renoir's Namor. Namor. All right. Phil, what do you have?
Hey, Jason, you know the only thing scarier than ghosts?
What? Two ghosts.
Muppets. So here's Jim Henson. It's Jim Henson's Marvel 1602, baby. Kermit the Frog is looking for his part. I've got the list of characters here. Okay, backing up. Sam the Eagle is James the First of England. Ralph the Dog is Sir Nicholas Fury. Gonzo the Great is Dr. Stephen Strange. Kermit the Frog is Carlos Javier. I'm sure there's a role for Piggy in there somewhere, but you get the idea.
Yep.
It's Marvel characters in the Jacobean era, and they're Muppets, man!
Solid.
You know, somewhere out there, Neil Gaiman just sat up and said, "Why Muppets? Why didn't I think of that?"
Yeah, Neil Gaiman.
Here's what I love most about this, is that Phil inadvertently bit a draft that we're doing in a month.
Yeah, no, this is a teaser. This is a spinoff. Mm. This is a backdoor pilot. For
oh, man.
Draft.
It's a crossover.
I love it. It's the world's greatest, most complicated crossover event in history. Mm-hmm. All right, Jim Henson's Marvel 1602. I can't wait to see it. Moises, what do you have?
I swear that
random.org.
Random.org has figured us out, because based on what has already happened in this category, this one just fits into, again, like, we're doing these movie studios work for them. The trailer for this movie
alternately,
begins
we're proving that every superhero movie in development is just the product of throwing something against the wall, right? It's one of those.
The trailer for this movie begins with two words. Good evening. Imagine, if you will, someone from another time, another place, in a world he never made.
Oh, God.
In my new film, The Trouble with Howard, or The Wrong Duck by Alfred Hitchcock. Alfred Hitchcock's Howard the Duck. How could you resist a suspense thriller that combines the elements found in Hitchcock's greatest movies, Vertigo, The Trouble with Harry, Psycho? Just put Howard the Duck in the worst Larry David style comedy of discomfort combined with suspense, and you have the greatest Alfred Hitchcock movie never made.
I think you have an entire idea for a franchise here, because it's Howard the Duck in Strangers on a Train. Howard the Duck, right? Exactly.
It's the career that Alfred Hitchcock didn't have, and it was just one duck away.
If only a duck had been his muse.
Did they get Cary Grant into the duck suit, or
Cary Grant will play Man Thing?
To catch a duck.
It takes a duck.
Dial D for duck.
I say, darling, I'm at the nexus of all realities, and I can take you anywhere.
Now, when they do rope, do you need another duck to be with him, or?
Yes.
Oh, he's Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah, the duck solves the crime monster.
Oh,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Keep up.
That's right. He solves it before the chimp.
What? Oh.
Wait. Oh, wow.
Wow. The chimp is always there.
Mm-hmm. Deep callback.
All right. Solid stuff, I guess. David, what do you have?
Well, in this round, I picked my favorite graphic novel of the selection. And there's only one director who could do it justice. I propose Federico Fellini's Uomini Guardiani, based on the seminal graphic novel by Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons. Anti-heroes, pirates, and chaos, and by Gardner Fox, he'll keep the giant squid at the end. I can just see Giancarlo Giannini as Rorschach saying, "Follow e basta," as, spoiler horn, Dottore Manhattan, Marcello Mastroianni, steps on him and his inkblot Vespa. Ciao!
Silk Spectre?
Silk Spectre.
Sophia Loren?
Sophia Loren.
Which one is she?
Sophia Loren.
Old one or new one?
Oh.
I guess it depends on when this is shot, right?
She could be both.
It's got to be black and white.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, Fellini's Watchmen. random.org, what can we say? It has to be. All right. For my last choice, It's a story of one young woman and her quest for fame. She's a singer, Allison Blair. She's a singer. She's a young singer. But she wants to be more. She wants to be a star. Along the way, she discovers she has strange mutant powers. She can fire lasers out of her body when the noise is there. But, you know, she falls into a world of intrigue. She's accused of being a social climber. In the end, we're left with a mystery. What became of Allison Blair? Where did she go? Did she fake her own death? Was she murdered? Is she out there somewhere? I don't know, but this is the kind of movie that could be told by our greatest storyteller. In theaters next summer, Orson Welles, The Dazzler.
Yes.
That's it. That's all I got.
Yes.
I like it.
Yes.
Bring me more wine.
I just, you know.
I knew from the very beginning that I loved the story of Allison Blair. She was just like me, drunk all the time.
Crumb, crisp coating.
It's very wearing on the ear, very difficult to say. Dick Crumb, good.
If you think about it, Allison Blair's whole story is Shakespearean. It's the story of Henry V by way of Twelfth Night, by way of Winter's... What was I saying?
As the mid-credit sequence, Orson Welles say, this is enough.
It's going to be a brilliant film, Merv. Have I told you about it yet?
But you've got to have that scene after one of Allison's concerts where Orson Welles stands up and just starts clapping really emphatically.
And I know that it's that she's a rock singer, but inexplicably, and I know he didn't direct this, but inexplicably, the soundtrack, it's mostly zither. I don't know.
That was my idea. Carol Reed stole it from me. Bastard.
Well, I would normally say, what have we learned? The answer is nothing. Although I think on another level, we've learned that you really can just plug directors and topics into a random number generator and come up with things that almost seem like they should have been, could have been, or will actually be made. But that ends our third round. I will go around and say goodbye to everybody. And I want you to tell me two or three of the ones that you didn't pick. Very quickly, as we say goodbye, Nathan Alderman, thank you for being here. What did you have left?
Okay, three, tough to pick, but Hal Hartley's ultra-low-budget Next Wave, Agents of Hate, featuring James Urbaniak as Machine Man.
Okay.
Roger Corman's Mutant X, in which Alex Summers, Peter Fonda, must attempt to find his way home after a psychedelic experiment with LSD strands him in a dimension of vampires, demons, and monsters. And, okay, I got to do the voice for this. Alana has it all. A great job at the Rand Science Academy, a loving father, Sardath, her fiercely supportive Thanagarian best friend, Shiera, and of course, a house with a fabulous kitchen. But then she meets Adam, a scruffy fish out of water. He's handsome. He's charming. He's good at helping her planet thwart alien invasions. But every time she's starting to feel close to Adam, he always seems to mysteriously vanish. Can Alana figure out a way to make sure her dream guy sticks around for good? Reese Witherspoon, Alan Arkin, Melissa McCarthy, and Matthew McConaughey as Adam Strange, a Nancy Myers film.
All right. Monty Ashley, thank you for being here. What did you have left?
Well, I've always thought the Fantastic Four movies could use a little more visual zazzing up, so I'd like to give that to John Woo.
Oh, man. Oh. There are a lot of birds up there on the top of the Baxter building.
That's right. Now I'm seeing Ben Grimm sliding down a staircase shooting like rock weapons.
Yeah.
While doves fly in the air.
It's clobbering.
He's just punching people
sunglasses.
All the way down. Yep. Punching people with both fists all the way down the banister.
Mm-hmm. I've got Francis Ford Coppola's Daredevil, which seems pretty obvious.
Yep.
And one thing I liked about Zack Snyder's Justice League is seeing how he did things differently from Joss Whedon. So I'm going to take the property The Watcher / What If, and I'm going to give it to three different directors, those being Jean Cocteau, who directed Beauty and the Beast, Cecil B. DeMille, and Ed Wood Jr., and let's just see what all three of them do. Maybe it's like a one of those movies where each of them directs 20 minutes.
Yeah, it's a little New York Stories kind of thing.
Yeah.
But don't give Ed the budget that Cecil has.
No, they all get the same budget.
Yeah, but Ed's not going to spend his. So
it's no. That's true.
All right. Lisa Schmeiser, thank you for coming up with this ridiculous idea and for being here. What did you have left?
I love John Waters, so I also had John Waters Wolverine, where he is a Baltimore boy who wants to run a barber shop. A busybody neighbor wants to put him out of business because of his mutton chops, since they are a sign of low-class behavior. Fortunately, since Wolverine has a big-hearted crew of regulars, including his best customers, Bald Charles and Clinky Eric, he is able to win the All-City Barber Competition. And
he also has razors built into his hands.
I was going to say, it's a little
Edward Scissorhands.
It is. It's Edward Scissorhands kind of driving in there.
Denis Villeneuve's Moon Knight is a beautiful and unearthly meditation on identity. And each of the Moon Knight's personae is represented through a new visual vocabulary, some in neon.
And it's 6 hours long.
So many drone shots over buildings in New York City. Wow. Yeah.
And finally, Carol Reed's The Swamp Thing is Alec Holland.
Wow.
Is Alec Holland falling in love with Abigail, but her ex, who is a giant pile of sentient plant goo, thinks he's Matthew Cable. This all takes place in Vienna immediately after World War II.
Of course it does. Yep. In the swamps down there, there's monsters down in those swamps, let me tell you.
And they're zither called music. Zithers.
Yes. Phil, thank you for being here. Philip Michaels, what did you have left?
I left it all on the table, man. But in the ghost round... If I hadn't have already used the bit where I thought that Richard Kelly just made rabbit movies, I was going to assume that Nova was a reboot of the PBS Science series and give it to Ingmar Bergman and have Death from the Seventh Seal, like, explaining how hearts work. Oh,
solid. Solid. Oh, it works.
Phil, I love how little you care.
I don't care. Sorry, nerds.
He cares a very precise amount. Did you not learn this from the Summer Superhero Spectacular? Come on. Okay, Moises Chuyon, thank you for being here. What did you have left?
Well, if I'd had the luck of Phil and had Ingmar Bergman, I would have paired him to the Silver Surfer on one of my lists. Jim Jarmusch's Savage Dragon.
Sure.
Just kind of hanging out and a bunch of ultra-violent parody stuff. Tim Burton's Deadpool in Hell. Jean-Luc Godard's Crisis on Infinite Earths, where it is very much a French New Wave impressionistic thing that doesn't care about any of the superhero continuity stuff and is just an existentialist drama about existence. George Miller's Legion of Superheroes, Guy Ritchie's Top 10. So in the dead director's round, I couldn't resist the notion of pairing the director of Il Buono, Il Brutto, and Il Cattivo, Sergio Leone, on Lanterna Verde, a spaghetti western Green Lantern. And I had Walt Disney, and I think a lot of people would be tempted to have paired Walt Disney with Howard the Duck, but that would have been gross sacrilege to Steve Gerber's memory. But I would pair Walt Disney with DC's Firestorm, starring Kurt Russell. The computer wore nuclear shoes.
Right. Lovely.
With Fred McMurray as the professor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. David J. Lohr, thank you for being here. What did you have left?
I had an embarrassment of riches. I had Chloe Zhao directing The Hulk, wandering like a nomad from place to place. Mm. John Carpenter's Legion of Supervillains.
I want that scene where the Hulk takes the part-time job at Amazon warehouse for Christmas.
Hulk not off task! Bottle too small for Hulk to pee.
I had Peter Jackson directing three films in the Avengers versus X-Men, and then three films in the X-Men versus Avengers, which has all actually had enough story for half of one movie. Mm-hmm. In the dead round, I had Buster Keaton directing Marvel's Damage Control, and Michelangelo Antonioni's Secret Six in Chi e Mockingbird.
Yes, again, it would be in Italian. And for me, I had just a handful, because really, once I got Miyazaki's Lockjaw and the Pet Avengers, I figured I was home free. However, I'm just going to say David Lynch's Sandman.
Wow.
Oh, sure.
Yes.
Wow.
A lot of Roy Orbison in that picture, I'm guessing.
Guillermo del Toro's Venom.
Yeah,
that would actually be good.
And Thor by David Lean, an epic set in Asgard. And nice. You know the rest. I couldn't bear to go on because I don't know Thor movie should be 3 hours long, but still.
And imagine verily, how beautiful I it like would be. Your lemonade.
Well, and it would be late era David Lean, so it'd be like 3.5 hours long and nothing happens.
Nothing happens. No, basically Thor gets his hammer at the end, maybe. Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. Or maybe
no,
there's just
that's
a hint.
The sequel.
No, there's
that's
a flashback where he's got the hammer and then he thinks remembers his time and then we flashback and we never go there again. Anyway, we've reached the end of this thing, whatever it was. We've learned a lot about nothing and nonsense and random number generators. And I want to thank my panelists once again for being here. Thanks to you for listening to this nonsense for 10 years. What are we doing? And we'll be back next
week
with
Lisa.
Something else. Yes, thank you, Lisa,
thank
for
you,
this
Lisa.
Hilariously
seriously.
Weird seriously. Idea. And
without Lisa, we would not have Christopher Guest's Detective Chimp.
Indeed.
Thanks to Monty.
This is the most fun I've had in a long time. Thank you, Lisa.
And thank you to all for listening. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.